Okay, Parsha Shmini is a very joyous Parsha, or at least it starts off on a very joyous note. After many, many months of hard work and anticipation, the Shekhinah, the Divine Presence, is finally going to come to the Jewish people. And so it was on that eighth day, after going through 7 days of installment, 7 days of preparation, Aaron and his sons are finally serving as the Jewish people's Kohanim. The offerings are brought, and then the presence of Hashem appears. Am Yisrael is overwhelmed. They literally fall on their faces, and they praise Hashem. And suddenly, a very joyous moment turns very sad. So what happens is, Aaron's two elder sons, Nadav and Avihu, they get very excited. The truth is that there was issues already from before. This is a continuation of the golden calf. But Aaron's sons reason that if you have to bring ketoret every time you bring a morning offering, because that elicits a heavenly fire, certainly now, after having achieved something so monumental and extraordinary, the right thing to do is to bring ketoret, which wasn't per se wrong, but they would have been right to ask Moshe, should we or shouldn't we? They didn't ask Moshe. Rashi tells us, according to another opinion, they were intoxicated, not only with the excitement and the magic of the moment, but also with wine as well. And so, the Torah says, a terrible thing happens. Vateitzei Eish Melefnei Hashem, chapter 10, verse 2, a fire goes out from before God, Vateichal Oisam, and the fire consumes them. Vayamusu lefnei Hashem, they die before God. Terrible thing. So when you think of a fire going out and a fire consuming somebody, what do you think they look like after being consumed by a fire? What would you think? Ashes. A fire consumed, you look like ashes, right? Vayomer Moshe l'Aaron, Moshe says to Aaron, Hu asher dibar Hashem, this is what God has spoken, Lema b'krovei HaKodesh, that I will become hallowed amongst my holy ones. This is a very, very heavy situation, very intense. But Aaron remains silent. And here's where our study is going to begin. Verse 4. He calls now people we have not really heard about before. Had not played a major role, not prior nor later. Mishael and Elzaphan are Bnei Uziel. They are the children of Uziel, who is Doid Aaron, who is the uncle of Aaron. Vayemer Aleim, he says to them, Kirvu, come a little closer, get into the fray. So'u es hacheichem me'eis pnei HaKodesh. Carry your brothers from before holiness and mechutz l'machne. Take them from where they are right now, which is their bodies were inside the Holy of Holies, or inside the Mishkan. Take them now, and you bring them outside the camp. So the question, first question is, who is Dod Aaron? Who is this? Who are we talking about? We never heard of him before. So Rashi says, Dod Aaron, this is Uziel Achi Amram Haya. Uziel was a brother of Amram. Then, of course, Moshe and Aaron are Ben, or Bnei Amram. They're the children of Amram. So who is Uziel? Uziel is Dod Aaron. He is his maternal uncle, his father's brother. Shenemer, as it says earlier, Uvnei Kehas, the children of Kehas, and the Torah enumerates that it's Amram, Yitzer, Chevron, and Uziel. So Amram then is the father of Moshe and Aaron. One of his brothers is Uziel. So Moshe Rabbeinu calls this uncle, the youngest uncle, or really their children, Mishael and Elzaphan, Bnei Uziel, who is the uncle, and he says, take your cousins away. So, Uis Achechem, why is he saying, take your brothers away? I mean, obviously, corpses will have to get taken care of. We have to have a funeral. So Rashi says, Moshe Rabbeinu was trying to get them to do this very quickly. Why? Ka'odom ha'imer l'chaveire, like a person who says to his companion, Haveire is hameis mofnei akala. There's a death in the middle of a wedding. So quickly, take the corpse away. The wedding has to go on. This is a very happy day. We can't have this turn into a funeral. quickly move the shlila arva v'sasimcha. We don't want to inhibit in any way or diminish the joy of this moment that the Jewish people have been waiting for. Now, it's interesting to note that he calls their cousins. Why wouldn't he call their own brothers? Nadav and Avihu have two brothers, and their names are Elazar and Isamar. Now, Elazar and Isamar are Kohanim. So Kohanim are not supposed to go to a funeral, right? With a couple of exceptions. When do Kohanim go to funerals? Parents. When else? If it's their brother. Unwed sister. It's their brothers. If it's their brothers, not only they're allowed to go, they're supposed to go. In fact, the laws of mourning, which min haTorah biblically is only the day of the funeral, Moshe Rabbeinu instituted the 7 days of mourning. So the laws of mourning are derived from the Kohanim, that Kohanim are obligated to perform this act of mourning, the act of bereavement, by participating in the funeral. And the reason that we learn this lesson, we're taught this ideal through Kohanim, is because Kohanim are the people who generally don't. And even Kohanim are obligated to participate in the funeral of their own brother and to mourn openly. So if Kohanim are obligated, and they are usually not obligated, in fact not permitted, how much more so a regular person? So what happened to the brothers of Elazar and Isamar? Why aren't they involved? The Sefarno says something very interesting. We have a halacha that we have a Kohen Gadol, and sometimes, along with the Kohen Gadol, there's somebody who waits in the wings. And the person who might become the next Kohen Gadol. For example, Yom Kippur, the Kohen Gadol has a very important job. The whole nation is literally on his shoulders. And if something happens to the Kohen Gadol, it's not just the Kohen Gadol is incapacitated. The entire Jewish people will lose the mitzvah of Yom Kippur. So what do you do? So they already had somebody prepared from before Yom Kippur that if something were to happen to the Kohen Gadol that would incapacitate him, that somebody was ready to step into the wings. And he would be called the Kohen Mashuach, the Kohen who was anointed. So the Kohen Mashuach, if he had to step in, he did not have an opportunity to get anointed, he did not have an opportunity to be appointed, but he would step in, and the moment he would step in and do the job, he would have all the halachas, all the rules of a Kohen Gadol. Even if the regular Kohen Gadol came back to his previous standing a day or a week later, but for that time, once he became like a Kohen Gadol, so then he has to have the halachas that apply to him of a Kohen Gadol. So the Sefarno suggests a big chiddush. He says that the children of Aaron were like Kohen Mashuach. They were like those prepared to be the next Kohen Gadol. Because now there's only two Kohenim in the whole world. Aaron is the Kohen Gadol, two Kohenim in the world. What if something happens to Aaron? Automatically, his children will have to step into that. And since his children will have to step into that role, so that's why, in this situation, Moshe Rabbeinu could not ask them to participate. He had to get their cousins to participate. Ramban says, doesn't go so far to say such a big chiddush. He says, you're right. As a rule, the brothers would get involved. But this was a hirasha. This was a unique situation. Because this is the greatest moment in history where Hashem's presence is actualized and brought into our reality. This is what we've been waiting for. This is the atonement for the golden calf. And now the Kohanim are going to disappear. So it was Hirasha. It was that specific time. The Shari Aaron wants to say a different Chiddush. He says, on the day that a Kohanim became Kohanim, everybody had the halacha of a Kohen Gadol. Today when they became Kohanim. Which again, that would only apply that one time, because it only once happened that Kohanim were appointed or anointed as Kohanim. Otherwise you're born into it. The Tertus Kohanim says something very interesting. The Medrash says, why it was Zeal? There was Chevron, there was Yitzhar. They were older than Uziel. Uziel's the youngest brother. Why the children of Uziel? So he says that Uziel was very much like Aaron. What do we know about Aaron? The Mishnah tells us, Ohev Shalom, V'rodev Shalom. He loved peace and he pursued peace. He was Mr. Peace. So we're told that Uziel was very much like Aaron. And because Uziel was very much like Aaron, Uziel's children were very much like Aaron. So there was some kind of special connection between Uziel's family and Aaron's family. And because of that, it was the most natural thing that if Aaron's sons couldn't do it, who should do it? The cousins who were closest, most like them. And interestingly, the Targum Yonasan ben Uzziel calls Dod Aaron, he calls it Chaviva de Aaron, the beloved of Aaron. In other words, the word Dod, according to the Targum Yonasan, is like the word Yidid. Yidid means a good friend. So he's the good friend of Aaron, the one who was a kindred spirit of Aaron. His children were the ones who carried Aaron's sons away. So they followed Moshe's instructions. Pasuk Hey, Vayikruvu, they came closer. Vayisaum bechuton noisam, they carried them in their tunics. El mechutz lamachana, outside the camp, kaasher diber Moshe, just as Moshe Rabbeinu had spoken. Now, what's the obvious question here? How did Nadav and Avihu die? Be'esh, a fire. What happens when somebody dies in a fire?
They're not around.
They're not around. I know that. They turn into ashes. When a fire came before God, they got vaporized by a fire. If they got burnt by the fire, what would happen to their clothes? For sure, their clothes are burnt. So yet it says they carried them. How did they carry them? Vayisaum bechutan noisam. We know they didn't go over and undress them. So whatever was left of the clothes, they must have left there. There was no, you couldn't play any games here. You couldn't prepare for a funeral. You're in the Beis HaMikdash. You're in the Ayel Mayed. So they picked them up and they carried them out. Why does the Torah have to say, Vayisaum bechutan noisam, that they carried them in their tunics? And anyway, how did the tunics survive? They didn't survive, but the tunics did survive. There was a horrible commercial that was done by Adidas. Terrible commercial. I don't think it ever actually made its way to air, or maybe it got shut down very quickly. It was a commercial of this, Islamo-fascist bomber who pulls up. You ever see it? Awful.
Yeah.
Pulls up in front of a restaurant. He's a suicide bomber. And he blows himself up in the car. And the only thing that's left is his shoes. thank you very much. Right? Like, wonderful. So, like, what is the point here? How did the clothes manage to, so to speak, survive the fire? And anyway, what difference does it make if the clothes were burnt, if the clothes weren't burnt? Whatever was left, the remains, they took out of there. So Rashi tells us, that you should know, Bechuton Noisam does not refer to the tunics of Mishael and Eltzofan, who put on some kind of special clothing as those involved in a mortuary. No, he says. This is the Kohanic raiments that we spoke of that had to be made especially for Aaron's sons. They were still wearing those special clothes. And because those clothes are so special, because the Torah talks about them, and because they became Kohanim by virtue of wearing those clothes, so because of this, so the Torah wants to teach us melamed shelo nisrifu vigdehim, that their clothing was not burnt. Ela nishmasam. The clothing wasn't burnt, but rather their souls were burnt. If their clothing wasn't burnt, what else wasn't burnt? Their bodies weren't burnt, exactly. So their souls were burnt. And Rashi says something very unusual. Kimin shnei chutin shel esh, like two threads of fire, came out of the Holy of Holies, v'nichnesu l'teich chaytameim, it went into their nostrils, and it burned their souls from the inside. But the body remained whole. Imagine this picture, like two laser beams. Two fires came out and divided, went into their nostrils, burnt their souls, and the bodies remained whole. If the bodies remained whole, we could imagine, obviously, the clothes were whole. How would the Torah tell us the bodies are whole? If it tells take them out, obviously there's something there. So therefore it says take them out in their clothes. When we say we take them out in their clothes, what we know from this is that the bodies have to be whole, because otherwise the clothes wouldn't be whole. Very unusual. And the question, of course, is why did this happen? Why did they die in this fashion? Why does Torah communicate to us in that way? And perhaps what lesson could we learn from this? So very interestingly, I did not find any commentary. I'm not saying there isn't, I didn't find, but the Rebbe did once talk about it, in passing, at a Fabrengen. And the Rebbe asked this question on page Kuf Lamed Aleph, which would be the equivalent of 134, in Simen Yud Zayin, The Rebbe has asked, Les Lishol, we could ask the question. Madua nen shu b'nei aharein dafke b'misa bilti regilizu. Why were they punished in such an unusual kind of death? Usually when you think of a fire is a fire. And if a fire came from heaven, when the fire came for the karbonis, it wasn't some kind of a nuclear fire or microwave. A fire came. So if a fire came forth because they brought a karbon and consumed them instead of the karbon, so then it should consume them. Why do we say the fire came, like two threads of fire that magically set forth from the Kedesh HaKadoshim and miraculously entered their nostrils, burned them out from inside their souls, but the body remained whole? Why? Why did it happen that way? The Eshleimer, the Rebbe said that a reasonable approach to this is Shadavar ubehesim leklal hayadua, that this would be following a perfect pattern. Here's the rule. Whenever Hashem punishes, and we learned this already from the story of the Egyptians and how they were punished, we have various commentary on the details of the makas. So we have this, the rule, the principle is HaKadosh Baruch Hu goymel mida keneged mida. As you approach, that's how you get responded to. Hashem always gives mida keneged mida. This could be in a good way. This could be in a bad way. It's always mida keneged mida. You are the one who will establish the parameters of how this unfolds. It's in your hands. So mida keneged mida, a measure for a measure, God responds to us. And therefore we have all kinds of incredible ideas about how a person should give tzedakah, how a person should not judge others, how a person should be kind and considerate and compassionate. Why? Mida keneged mida. If you're going to be captious of fault-finding with others, Hashem will be the same way with you. If you'll be generous and easygoing with others, Hashem will be the same way with you. And many, many examples of mida keneged mida. Hashem treats us the way we engage, the way we treat. And as we set the tone, it's in our court. Hashem does not legislate to us per se. He doesn't set the parameters of how this relationship is going to go. We do. And this, of course, happens sometimes in a negative way too. When we behave inappropriately, we are the ones who set those parameters. What was the sin of Aaron's sons? Chetam shel bnei Aaron hoya behakrovas eish zara. What did they do wrong? They brought an unauthorized fire. It doesn't mean it was a bad fire. It doesn't mean there wasn't good logic backing up what they did. So what was the problem? It's unauthorized. There wasn't what was asked of you. Sometimes you can have a great idea. Maybe it's even right. Get authorization. Find out if it's the right thing to do. You have to look in the Shulchan Aruch. You have to ask the Moshe Rabbeinu. They didn't ask Moshe Rabbeinu. They were very comfortable making their own rulings. That was wrong. The halacha is when you're b'fnei rabcha, you're before your master, your teacher, you have to consult with him. But they didn't. So they brought an unauthorized fire, or what translates quite literally as a strange fire. Strange means strange for the circumstances. What was inappropriate, didn't match, didn't fit, wasn't the right thing for now. Why? Unauthorized. And what else did they bring? Strange fire and strange incense. Keteres zara. Unauthorized incense. So they came actually with two utensils, a fire pan that had coals and a vessel that had incense, because that's how you used to bring incense. You'd come with a fire pan with coals and one incense. And the ground incense would be poured on top of the coals. And now what happens? It's incinerated. A plume of smoke goes up. That's how they used to bring incense. So they did both. They came with unauthorized fire, fire they weren't told to bring, and incense they weren't told to bring. Lachain, the Rebbe suggested, so what? How was their punishment? Their punishment was with a thread of fire. That was keneged eish hazara shekrivu. They brought an unauthorized fire. Well, an unauthorized, or so to speak, not non-typical fire, was something they elicited in response. Because they brought fire, the fire came back. In other words, like you fight fire with fire. Hashem responded to fire with fire. Did I ask you to bring fire, he said? I didn't ask you to. Obviously, it seems like a very harsh punishment. We have to remember we're dealing with the Nadav and Avihu. We're dealing with some of the holiest people on the face of earth, second only to Moshe of Aaron, people who should have known better. And so because they brought us an unauthorized fire was elicited. And what happened to the fire? The fire entered their bodies. It went into their nostrils. This, the Rebbe suggests, is keneged haktoris haktoris. This corresponds to the offering of the incense. How is incense apprehended, if you will? How do we grasp it?
Smell.
Through our nostrils, smell. So where did the fire go? Into their nostrils. Because the idea of incense is chut and elu, these strings of fire, or threads of fire, nichnesu l'teich choytameyem, keneged aktaras aktaris, hamiyuedes, whose primary function and service is reyach, is scent. And everybody knows that you smell with your nose. So the punishment had to come in the image of what they did wrong. What did they do wrong? Two things, fire and incense. So the fire came in a form of something that would penetrate the area of the body that was connected to incense. Since incense is smelled or sniffed, since it's something, it's aroma that comes into the body, that's ingested in the body through the nostrils, and since what they brought is a strange fire, so that's why there was chut and shalesh, there was a thread of fire. It wouldn't elicit a whole fire, because it has to be on both counts. They did two things wrong. So the response from Hashem has to be on both counts. They brought strange fire in a manner of incense. A fire came in a manner of incense and entered their nostrils. And that was the story of Aaron and his sons. And there are many lessons for us. There's lots to talk about what Aaron's sons did wrong, and what we're not supposed to do as a result of it. Getting carried away and swept away in a holy fervor that impels you to do things which are unauthorized, or what we're going to call not legal, not proper according to halacha. But you're so excited, you're so swept up in so much ecstasy and holy spiritual happiness and fervor. That's very nice, it's great. But you still have to follow the code of Jewish law. You still have to do what Hashem asks, because we serve God on God's terms, not on our terms. But let's leave the sin aside for a moment. What we can see clearly is, from the way that Rebbe explains this, is that everything always goes mida keneged mida. There's an expression in Hayyim that says that if a person needs help in a certain area, they should try to help others in that area. So if somebody wants nachas from their own children, they should help somebody else have nachas from the children. If somebody needs help in parnasa, help somebody else have parnasa. If somebody wants Hashem to open their mind in the study of Torah, help open somebody else's mind in the study of Torah, and so on and so forth. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu always responds to us. That's the amazing thing about this relationship. We're in a relationship with the King of all kings, the greatest of the great, and yet we are the ones who set the tone. We set the tone. It's all in our hands. Hashem says, I'll respond. You serve first. L'chaim.